What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
At California Psychics, we know that sometimes you can wake up thinking,
I don't know if I'm in the right career. Ew. Or the right relationship.
But whatever your life dilemma, at California Psychics, we'll give you the guidance you need to feel certain about your life choices. And because we only connect you with the very best, we guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. California Psychics. Call 1-800-PREDICT today and get 20 minutes for just $20.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
It is a happy edition of Rico Bronya. Episode 495, the Mets take care of business. They win all three games against the Colorado Rockies. They win all six games against the Colorado Rockies. And we, as Met fans, have the biggest lead in the NL East that we've had in over a month. But I do want to start off the Rico with a question. And that question was posed to me by my wife. Sunday afternoon, sitting on the deck, boys are playing. I got the Met game on, and the Mets have opened up a huge lead on Sunday. I think at this point it was 8-0. It was right after Jeff McNeil hit the 3-run home run to make it 8-0. And I turned to her and I said, "Hon, the Mets are up 8-0. And she said, "Who are they playing again?" I said, "They're playing the Rockies, the worst team maybe in the history of baseball." And she asked me a question that I want to ask you, Hoff, and everybody in the audience. And remember, my wife is not a sports fan. She puts up with me, right? She said simply, "Do you feel bad?" That was the question. Do you feel bad for the Rockies, the team that we beat all six times, the team we were up 8-0 on? Before I tell you what my answer was to my wife, Hoff and everybody in the audience, do you feel bad?
The answer is absolutely not. Not even for one second did I go, "Oh, that's terrible." What I did think, and I will say this before we get into it, I did think of how can this team actually be successful? What can they possibly do? Do they build a dome? Do they do something? Because it's kind of getting out of hand here that this team sucks so bad.
Yeah, they suck, but it has nothing to do with the stadium. It has to do with talent. That's really what it comes down to, and bad decisions. You know, you go sign Chris Bryant and you trade Nolan Arenado. I mean, you make bad decisions. But the answer to my wife was, no, I don't feel bad. The only people I feel bad for are their fans, because I know what it's like to be a fan of a team that's hopeless, what it's like to be a fan of a team that season is over immediately into a season. But no, I don't feel bad for Hunter Goodman. I don't feel bad for Orlando Arcia, who otherwise would be, you know, toiling in the minor leagues looking for a job and instead is getting a chance to play first base for the first time in his career. And the other reason I don't feel bad, as I explained to my wife, is just because you play a bad team, a historically bad team, doesn't mean you're going to beat the bad team. And that's where the Mets deserve a ton of credit. They just had a stretch over the last few weeks, and it can be mocked as, oh, they're facing crap competition. They had a sequence of games in which they played the Chicago White Sox and six with the Rockies. Nine games. Obviously, the Dodgers were mixed in there too, but nine games against the White Sox and Colorado, and they went 8-1. And that's not a certainty. You know, even the Rockies themselves, as bad as they are, and they are historically bad, it's not a certainty you're going to beat them every single time. I warned that before this series began, or even the previous series began, that, yeah, the Mets are a lot better, but it's baseball. You can't win every single game. So I explained that to my wife. Like, listen, yeah, they suck. Yeah, it's terrible for their fans. But the fact that the Mets, especially over these last two games, were able to pummel them, just destroy them, save their bullpen, pad some stats, make it easy. That's an accomplishment. It really is. So for anyone who tells you on Monday or Tuesday, they beat the Rockies, who cares? No. You beat the Rockies and you took care of business. And on Friday night, we did a Rico for the Friday night game, so you can just go back and download episode 494. The Mets were in a game in which it was 2-2 in the bottom of the eighth inning, and the Rockies had the bases loaded and nobody out. We thought in that moment, as Ryan McMahon came to the plate, 2-2, bases loaded, bottom of the eighth inning. Didn't we all think the Rockies were at least taking this game? And who knows after that? So from that moment to get out of that eighth inning jam, to get the huge hit by Francisco Lindor in the ninth inning, and to shut the door in the bottom of the ninth inning, and then proceed on Saturday and Sunday in the final two games of this series to completely take care of business, that is an accomplishment. It really is. So let's go to game two of this series, the game that was started by Clay Holmes with Germán Márquez on the other side. And let's not forget, if you stayed up late Saturday night, 9:40 first pitch, my God, 9:40. And I guess it's not that bad when you're used to 10-10 starts, but this was our final really late game for a while, really until after the All-Star break. Unless you're going to Europe, and then those games start at 1 a.m. That'll be aye. But for all of us East Coast folk, this was the last time we had to stay up really late on Saturday night. And it's easy to forget this now because the Mets swept Colorado, and Saturday's game turned into a laugher, and obviously Sunday's game was a laugher. But this game started with Francisco Lindor getting a base hit and stealing second. They had a runner on second and nobody out, and Brandon Nimmo flied out. Juan Soto struck out looking, and poor Pete Alonso hitting some terrible luck. He was behind 0-2, but as has been the case with Pete all year long, hit the ball really hard, just right at the third baseman, Ryan McMahon. So the Mets begin this game on Saturday after what was an ugly win on Friday. I mean, you take the win however you get it, but it wasn't the prettiest thing. It wasn't a Picasso. They start off on Saturday by going 0-3 with runners in scoring position in the very first inning of the game. Let's not forget that as we enjoy taking care of business against Colorado. And then in the second inning, they get a two-out error by Tyro Estrada when Brett Beatty hits a ground ball right at him, and Estrada can't make the play, and they can't take advantage of it because Jared Young pops up in foul territory. Then in the third inning, they repeat the first inning with Lindor getting a leadoff hit, stealing second base, basically fooling everybody with the bad toe. Even Gary Cohen and Keith Hernandez, because when Lindor got to first, he's limping. He doesn't look great. Basically, Francisco used his first two plate appearances to completely rope-a-dope the Colorado Rockies. And he steals second base easily. And again, in a spot in which you have a runner on second and nobody out, with 2, 3, and 4 of the order coming up, Nimmo flies out, Soto grounds out, and Pete Alonso strikes out. So we are three innings into this game. The Mets are 0-6 with runners in scoring position. That's where we are. Now, they do get that bomb of a home run by Ronnie Mauricio right before the Lindor base hit, runner on second, nobody out. So it wasn't a leadoff hit. It was simply a no one on, no out hit after Mauricio hit that bomb of a home run. So 0-6 with runners in scoring position. It's a 1-1 game after Ryan McMahon goes oppo against Clay Holmes. And it feels like we're in the same slog we were in on Friday night, the same slog the Mets were in throughout the Dodger series. As we joked on a previous Rico Bronya, it was Dan who said it. The Mets play games against the Rockies like they play games against the Dodgers. Low scoring, arduous battles. And luckily that would change in the fifth inning of this game. But going into the fifth inning, outside of the Mauricio home run, which was very encouraging to see, I'm going to spend a few minutes on that in a second. It was the same old from this Met offense, failing to come through with runners in scoring position. But let me get to the Mauricio home run because I feel good about something. If you go back to Friday, when the Mets won the baseball game 4-2 with the two runs late from Francisco Lindor, in the top of the eighth inning of that game, while it was still tied, Ronnie Mauricio hit one that I thought was getting out to left center field. It was a double, and it was his first base hit since returning from AAA, and his first base hit since late 2023. Obviously, he wasn't in the major leagues at all last season. And I said on the last Rico Bronya, and I say this a lot, and most of the time it doesn't come through, so that's why I feel good about it, and I want to repeat myself. When Mauricio got that double, I sat there on the Rico and said, you know what? He was 0 for his first eight. He looked overwhelmed. Maybe that double, that two-out, nobody-on double that led to nothing in the eighth inning, maybe that double's going to lead to something for Ronnie Mauricio. And boy, did it ever. Because that home run to lead off the third inning was an absolute shot. It was a tantalizing home run because it was one of those bombs that was not only great in the moment because it gave the Mets a 1-0 lead, especially in the midst of their struggles with runners in scoring position, but it was intoxicating about what this kid can do and the power that he has. But not only did that two-out double in the eighth inning of game one after his 0-for-8 to begin the season in the major leagues, not only did that double lead to a home run, it led to a base hit in his following at-bat. And then on Sunday in the finale of this series, it led to two more hits and two more walks. So since the Mauricio double, we are talking about Ronnie Mauricio going 4 for his next 7. So it did lead to something, and that was very, very encouraging to see. But while this was going on, credit to Clay Holmes, 2-on, nobody out in the first inning, gets through it, puts the first two guys on base in the third inning, gets a huge double play against Tyro Estrada. He does give up that home run to Ryan McMahon, but works throughout a two-out double that he gave up to Sam Hilliard, works through trouble in the fifth inning, 2-on, 2-out. So Clay Holmes did what he's been doing. He threw strikes for the most part. I mean, basically not for the most part. He didn't walk anybody. He threw strikes. He got out of trouble. He did give up a bunch of base hits. He gave up 9 hits in this game, but he was able to make the big pitch when he had to. You know, as much as we talk about the Met issues with runners in scoring position, and obviously we look at this the complete opposite, Clay Holmes induced the Rockies into 0-for-8 with runners in scoring position. So really, really good work by Clay Holmes, keeping this a close game, keeping this a 1-1 game until the Met offense would finally bust out. And boy, did it ever. Big hit by Brandon Nimmo, RBI single, a home run by Jared Young. And I give Jared Young a lot of credit because that was an underratedly big home run. I don't want to just gloss over it because Holmes gives up the run in the fourth inning to tie the game at 1. It's now the top of the fifth inning. This is the shutdown inning for Colorado and Herman Marquez. But for us, as Met fans, it's the response inning. It's the, okay, you guys came back and tied the game. Let's see if the Mets can respond. And Jared Young swung at the very first pitch, went opposite field, second home run as a Met. They built off that with Mauricio getting a hit, stealing a base, Nimmo coming through with an RBI single. Unfortunately, Pete Alonso came up with 2-on and 1-out and bounced into a double play. But the home runs continued. Jeff McNeil hits a leadoff home run in the sixth inning. Again, they had an opportunity to score more runs. They didn't because Starling Marte, pinch hitting for Jared Young, bounced into a double play. Mendy went righty-righty because the Rockies went to their left-handed reliever, Ryan Rollison, and that caused Mendy, rightfully so. I'm not complaining. It's the right move to make, to go to Marte to pinch hit for Jared Young. But they tack on runs in the seventh inning, McNeil with a sacrifice fly, and then a very big hit by Luis Torrens to really break the game open. And Torrens continues to do that. He's not only played stellar defense behind the plate, but outside of Pete, who's been their most consistent hitter with runners in scoring position, Luis Torrens has done it too. And that's an underratedly big hit. Because at the time, it's 5-1. It's still a game. That base hit breaks it open. It makes it 7-1. They tack on another run with a Brandon Nimmo RBI double. And so we saw them at offense finally break out against this crappy Colorado pitching. And all the while, Clay Holmes gives you six strong. Jose Buteau comes in, gives you two scoreless. Jose Castillo gives you a scoreless inning. And we actually get to relax. We get to chill and see a nice, comfortable 8-1 victory. It wasn't comfortable till the fifth or sixth inning, but nevertheless, the second half of the game was very comfortable to watch. And what was so impressive, and I barely mentioned his name in talking about this game, but I want to spend a little bit of time on him, is Francisco Lindor. Because Lindor returned to the lineup in this game. And it was kind of obvious he was going to play because he pinch hit on Friday, got the game-winning hit, which was awesome enough. He now starts the following day. He gets on base three times. He goes 3-for-5. I mentioned the rope-a-dope play that he pulled in stealing a pair of bases where the Rockies probably thought he was damaged goods. How about this guy? He breaks his toe. He misses, I couldn't even say two games because he's pinch hitting in the opener of this series and he's getting the game-winning hit. And he doesn't look fully healthy, but in his first game back, full game back, he goes 3-for-5, scores a run, steals two bases. And the other thing that was really cool in a game like this, they score 8 runs. They get 12 hits. Only one of the hits came from Soto and Alonso, their 3-4 hitters. Soto went 0-for-4 with a walk. Pete went 1-for-4 with a single, 1-for-5 with a single. So you get a combined 1-for-9 from Juan Soto and Pete Alonso, and you score 8 runs on 12 hits, and you win a baseball game 8-1. That's what I'm loving. What I'm loving about this team so far, and I've said this a lot about Soto's struggles, is that he has not gotten hot, and the Mets have the best record in the National League. He has gotten hot yet, hasn't gotten hot yet, and the Mets are still winning games on a nightly basis. They're mostly doing it because their pitching continues to be absolutely fantastic. And it almost becomes underrated now. That stat about the fact how the Mets have 4 starting pitchers, all with ERAs under 3, that's insane. That's insanity. This is a franchise based on pitching. 1969, pitching. Think about the rotation in 86, the rotation in 2015. Even in 2000, sure, they scored a lot of runs. They had those two aces at the top with Mike Campton and Al Leiter. This is a franchise based on pitching. And nobody in their right mind, maybe outside of David Stearns and Jeremy Hefner, thought that this rotation, which always had a chance to be good, but great like this. And I'm sitting here, I admit it, waiting for the other shoe to drop. And that's not being negative. That's just saying they can't maintain a 2.8 ERA. They can't maintain. They're going to have a sub-3 ERA. Eventually, they won't. And I stand by that. Eventually, they're not going to have the best ERA in Major League Baseball. I stand by that. But as of now, I mean, we're in the middle of June now. It's June 8th, June 9th, June 10th. And here they are with a sub-3 ERA. And here they are with 4 starting pitchers, including Clay Holmes, who delivered in this game the very effective 6-inning, 1-run performance. 4 starting pitchers with sub-3 ERAs. The only weak link, if you will, is Tylor Megill. And honestly, he may be the weak link, but for a 5th starter, those numbers are fine. Mid to high 3 ERA, 5 innings, 2-run performances from your 5th starter, I'll take it. So nice victory on Saturday. Let me jump to Sunday because Sunday was freaking amazing. This was the game, obviously, that caused my wife to say, "Do you feel bad?" The answer being, "Oh, hell no." But the tone of this game was set by Jeff McNeil. We don't compliment Jeff McNeil a lot around here. Maybe we should. Maybe we got to change our tune just a little bit. Not because I want to keep him forever. Not because he's the greatest player of all time, but because he's performing. And if a guy's performing, he deserves credit. 10-pitch at-bat to start the second inning. Great to see. I love long at-bats. And he ends it with a bomb. Real tone setter for this game. 10-pitch at-bat, home run. Base hit Ronnie Mauricio, walk Tyrone Taylor, Francisco Alvarez starting to hit a little bit. This was a big Sunday for Francisco. Three hits, including the RBI single that gave them the early 2-0.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey, I'm gum disease. You may know me by my formal name, periodontal disease. No? I can't believe this. No respect. Same story everywhere I go. Over half of all adults in America live with me, and they act like they don't even know I exist. I mean, come on. Whole body health? I am gum disease. I am literally linked to almost every major disease. Diabetes, heart disease, Alzheimer's. You can't just ignore me.
Find a dentist near you committed to caring about all of you. Visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Then you jump to the third and you see the Pete Alonso show. Juan Soto, who was on base all day in this game, on base 6 times, 3 walks, 3 singles. He's on base in front of Pete, which is the real value. And Pete hits a 2-run home run to make it 4-0. Tyrone Taylor rips an RBI double, 5-0. Jeff McNeil comes up in the fourth after the first 2 outs are recorded by Juan Mejia. And here's Juan Soto behind in the count. Base hit left center field where he's ripping all his singles. Pete Alonso comes through with a base hit up the middle. And then Jeff McNeil hits his 2nd home run of the game. That's what prompted the "do you feel bad" line. And credit to the Met offense, because even after Tylor Megill started to look human in the 5th inning and gave 2 back, they scored 2 more in the 7th. Brett Beatty, 2-run home run. 2 more in the 8th inning. Another Pete Alonso home run. Tack on another, a Francisco Alvarez home run. And we get to see the Mets put up 13 runs. A final FU. A final thank you to the Colorado Rockies. I will admit, Tylor Megill strikes out the side to start the game. Great sign. Gets through a couple of walks in the 2nd, pitches a 1-2-3 3rd, 1-2-3 4th. And as the 5th inning was beginning, with the Mets firmly in control of this game, up 8-0, I didn't say it out loud, but I will admit what I said in my head as the 5th inning began. I said, just give up a hit. I did. I didn't want any flirting with a no-hitter. I didn't want another combined no-hitter, at least in this setting. I didn't want to have to worry about it, because here's the other thing. I'm sitting on my deck watching this game, and I'm pausing it every time I want to do something with the kids or do something with my wife. Come back, I restart the game. This game at 8-0 is over, so the pausing and doing other things and then going back is easy. Yeah, it's 8-0. I mean, geez. If Tyler McGill's flirting with a no-hitter, I feel like at 6 o'clock or at 5 o'clock, I'm not going to want to pause. I'm not going to want to say, oh, yeah, who cares? Let me go run around for a second. So I asked the baseball gods, selfishly, I admit, put me out of my misery here. I don't want to flirt with a no-hitter. I don't want to see McGill flirt with a no-hitter. Just give up a base hit. Because God knows he's not going 9. It's not like he's a starter who's going to somehow be economical. And Mendy's going to say, screw it, I need to give Tyler McGill a chance at a no-hitter. So you know it's going to be another one of those combined jobs. So give up a hit. And he did. And then he gave up another one and another one and actually made the fifth inning a little bit dicey because they did have the bases loaded with one out and the game was 8-2. So the Rockies were a big hit away from spoiling what would have been an easy victory for McGill. He did get it. And spoiling what was going to be a laugher. But credit to McGill. I got to give him a little bit of credit. Bases loaded, one out, 3-4 hitters coming up. Their best hitter, Hunter Goodman. It's 8-2. This easily could have become a game. He got Goodman to fly out. He got Estrada to pop up. And then it was over for Tyler McGill. And then Paul Blackburn did a really good job of just eating innings. He was not great. He had his own issues. He gave up a bunch of hits, gave up a bunch of runs. He even walked guys, which was infuriating, especially the walk to Hilliard right after he came into the game and put the first two guys on base with nobody out. He gave up like 4 extra base hits. This was not a great performance by Paul Blackburn, but he understood the mission at hand, especially when the Mets were tacking on 5 runs in the last 3 innings. And the mission at hand was eat some goddamn innings. That was it. Because there was no one in this bullpen, whether it was Brazoban, Garrett, Stanek, Buto, Castillo. Brandon Waddell was the only other guy who I think Mendy would have been okay seeing. Because this bullpen has been overtaxed over the last week. Rightfully so. They play a lot of close games. I mean, you're trying to win. They're trying to win. I mean, what are you going to do? So this was an absolute get-right spot for this bullpen, and Paul Blackburn accomplished it. And because of that, even though his final line was, let me see, 4 innings, 7 hits.
3 runs.
That's why I'm going to controversially say that the Rico, I'm the man now star of the series is Paul Blackburn. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Oh, I was going to kill you right there. You got to be. But you know what? I will tell you this much. I think I know someone who listens to the podcast. And Carlos Mendoza, you may think I'm crazy for saying Brandon Nimmo should bat 9th, but he finally took my advice and took 2 starting pitchers and combined them together for the entire game.
Yeah, but the circumstances were a little bit different. It was literally eat freaking innings because we have a huge lead. And that is an important value of Paul Blackburn and Brandon Waddell, because a way to kind of cheat a little bit in your bullpen is to have a guy or two just eat up a ton of innings. And the beauty of Blackburn going the 4 innings is that it keeps him stretched out. Now, right now, it doesn't feel like Paul Blackburn is anywhere close to needing to make a start because Frankie Montas is on his way back despite his struggles in rehab games, and Sean Manaea is on his way back. But you never know when you're going to need Paul Blackburn to come in and make a spot start. So him being able to pitch 4 innings out of the bullpen actually serves 2 values, not just the value of saving your bullpen on a Sunday afternoon, but allowing him to remain stretched out. Because it's not easy to have a guy in your bullpen on standby to also enter the rotation at a moment's notice, because then they stop pitching. They don't pitch a lot. So it's actually good, Hoff, to have games like this every once in a while for Blackburn to remain stretched out.
Is that why, because you said it, you know, he saved the bullpen. Is that why they gave him a pity save for Paul Blackburn?
The save was a coincidence. The save is a flaw in the stat. And you know what? It is a save. As much as Phil Mushnick's going to get upset about it, it's a blowout. He got a save. He saved the bullpen. That's a save. He may not have saved the game, but did he save a beat up Met bullpen? He absolutely did. So, look, great job by this team. This was a wonderful road trip to get the split in Los Angeles and then win all three games against Colorado and put together a 5-2 road trip. That is a major, major success. And it's also a success that they beat the crap out of the Rockies and the White Sox. I can't say it enough. I looked at these nine games, and I didn't know what to expect. I mean, I expected the Mets to win more than lose, obviously, but you're going to lose some games against bad teams. And the Mets were able to avoid that against Colorado by going 6-for-6. It wasn't always easy. A lot of these games were close, but I am glad that these final two games in Coors Field were exclamation point easy victories for this Met team. Fatten up, baby.
I do this message for all the salty Yankee fans that watch this podcast for hate. The Yankees lost to this miserable team. So just remember that. And I gotta emphasize as much as possible as they're losing to the Boston Red Sox.
But that is not like the Yankees losing a game to the Rockies, and they did. They also won 2 out of 3. That's normal. Like, that's why this team deserves a lot of credit, because they didn't lose any games to them. And that's not easy to do. That's my main point. So, sure, if you want to throw shade at the New York Yankees for losing a game to the Colorado Rockies, be my guest.
This is that was for Keith McPherson, for Chris McMonagle, for Sean Marash, Tiki Barber is probably listening to this right now. I know he's a big Yankee fan, so I want to make sure that they feel that message.
Well said. Well said. Let's get to some of your emails. We'll obviously name a Rico, I'm the Man Now star of the series. And yes, a net negative, which is very tough to do when you win three games in a row. But we'll have a discussion about it at least. Let me go to MJ Beck from Glendale, New York, who writes, Evan, I'm usually 100% behind the Mets booth, but they made no sense to me on something they said in the ninth inning on Sunday's game. Down 13-4, Jordan Beck, after an RBI double, takes third on defensive indifference. Gary and Keith adamant that was violating some mythical unwritten rule and showed poor sportsmanship. Why? The next batter, Ryan Ritter, hits a little infield hit that scored Beck. I'm not defending Beck because he and I share a last name, but what's the issue? Ritter gets an RBI for his stats. Beck has a run scored for his stats, and it helps bring his team a bit closer in Coors Field where anything can happen. Is this a big deal? Why is it okay to take second base on a defensive indifference, but not third? Is there a point where the deficit is too big to do that? If it was 8-3, it's okay, but not 13-4. This sounds like nonsense. So, MJ, I heard it too, but I'll have to go back. I didn't hear it the way you heard it. I heard more of like an incredulous, he took third base. Not, that's a disgrace, you can't do that. Now, I'll go back and re-listen to that, but I didn't take it as he broke some kind of unwritten baseball rule. In fact, the way I took it was a surprise that he took third, because usually defensive indifference is a guy taking second. So I thought that's what it was, but to me, it's no big deal. There is no unwritten rule about taking first or second or third, doing anything, you know, late in the game. You're doing whatever you can to try to score runs and win. And while it was a blowout, Jordan Beck led off that ninth inning with a double. And you're right. If it wasn't for him taking third base on defensive indifference, Ryan Ritter's little ground ball infield hit wouldn't have been an RBI. And that was, yes, Ryan Ritter's first major league RBI. Worked out for him. He was kind of impressive in the 2 days we saw him. Moved up to the two hole in this finale. Had a triple for his first major league hit. And that little infield hit turned out to be his first major league RBI. So I agree with you, no big deal. Ron writes, the Mets won 6 games against the worst team in baseball. Absolute perfection. We're allowed to celebrate this. How often over the last few years do we look at a soft schedule for the Mets and they let us down? It's a great series win. Lastly, do you think if Pete Alonso keeps up this pace, he has any chance at the MVP? All I care about is World Series wins, but we have never had an MVP to think it's possible for Pete this season. I think the way he's played through 67 games makes it possible. I mean, right now, and I'll pull up the stats and I'll tell you who I think is the MVP to start this season. He's up there. Mike, by the way, before I even look at the numbers, my guess is it's going to be Pete Crow Armstrong. Is that a crazy, like, off-the-top kind of guess?
on who has the numbers, especially because you got to factor in the Cubs are in first place. The Mets also have Francisco Lindor having a great year. But before I even look at stats, which I'm about to do, the guy that jumps out at me is Pete Crow Armstrong is the National League MVP.
No, Pete Crow Armstrong is definitely up there for sure. But I made this case on Friday night, Saturday morning on my show. Besides, hey, it's time to sign him long-term and lock him up as a Met for life. Pete Alonso is the National League MVP. And don't give me the Shohei Ohtani crap. I'm sorry. The guy does nothing but play DH. He's not a two-way player. He doesn't play the field. He does nothing but hit. Good for him. Pete Alonso is more clutch and better defensively than anybody else is giving credit for. It's time to recognize him as an actual MVP.
Yeah, if Ohtani pitches in the second half of the year, he's going to be very tough to beat. I think we all understand that. Even if it's only a handful of starts, you put that together with his great offensive numbers, he's going to win the MVP. It's almost like a default if he pitches. But as of right now, I mean, Freddie Freeman's got the best overall stats this season. He has a 1,000 OPS. He's hitting .345, 9 home runs, 40 RBIs. Pete's at .301, 990 OPS. So basically the same OPS, 17 home runs and 61 RBIs. He has far more RBIs than anyone else who's an MVP candidate. You have Ohtani with his big numbers, 23 home runs, 39 RBIs. He only has 11 stolen bases, which is not a huge number for him. 1,021 OPS. Kyle Schwarber's having a very good year. Will Smith of the Dodgers having a very good year. Corbin Carroll with some good numbers. Pete Crow Armstrong's numbers aren't good enough. I mean, he does have 21 stolen bases. He does play great defense. What I find weird, so WAR has always been disrespectful to first basemen. We've always known that. How is Shohei Ohtani's WAR higher than Pete Alonso's? Like, their overall stats are very close. If you want to say Ohtani has a slight edge, sure. Not going to disagree. He has a higher OPS. He's hit more home runs. No knock on the offense that Ohtani's had. But like you said, Hoff, he doesn't play the field. So wouldn't Pete Alonso, who's played great defense at first base, I could even argue gold glove caliber defense at first base at times, despite some of the errors that may jump out at you, how would it be possible for Ohtani to have a higher WAR than Alonso right now? It's not like he's pitching yet.
I am going to create a stat. I'm not sure what I'm going to call it yet. Maybe it's going to be called the Pete Alonso stat. But it's about first baseman and why they should be valued more and why people like him don't get as much credit. Because because maybe the error that he makes decreases his value. Maybe that he does give up a run on a bad throw, and that's like, oh, well, that's two runs against him. But they are not – they forget the fact that he's involved with, what, 70% of the plays on the field? How many throws get made to first base on the diamond in a regular game? Shohei Ohtani does nothing defensively to win you ball games. He does nothing pitching-wise to win you ball games right now. All he does is hit the ball. That's great. But you can't overvalue a hitter at times when there's two other parts of the game that he does nothing with.
I don't think that the writers look at it this way anymore. But, you know, back in the old days, Freddie Freeman would be killing him right now. The fact that you've got three, if you include Will Smith, who's had a great year, that the vote would be split. And even in Chicago, you know, I mentioned Pete Crow Armstrong. Kyle Tucker has put up MVP caliber numbers. But to answer your question, Pete Alonso's in that short discussion as of right now. The problem is there's still 95 games left. Let's see if Pete can keep this up. Let's see where the Mets are. Let's see where Freddie Freeman and Shohei Ohtani's numbers are. But I think if Ohtani ever pitches, he's just going to lock up the MVP. It's going to be
one last question about Pete Alonso, as it's June 8th right now, June 9th tomorrow, depending on when you listen to this podcast. Is Pete Alonso breaking the home run record before the All-Star game?
How many does he need now?
I think 10 to break it. At least 10. If it's not 10 to tie it, it's 10 to break it.
Yeah, well, he did tie and pass David Wright for second on the all-time list on Sunday. He's on a rampage, man. He had some road trip. He had an unbelievable road trip. I mean, when you look at, I think he drove in 16 runs in the last six games of this road trip. Because the first game against L.A., he was very quiet. He didn't do much. But if you combine the RBIs he had over the last three games against LA and what he did in this Colorado series, I think he's got 16 RBIs in his last six games, which is just obscene, and hitting a lot of home runs. So I'd put nothing past him right now.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Escape the heat to True North Convenience Stores and get any size True Oasis Fountain Drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi Fountain Drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's always been diet and exercise. Why not diet, exercise, brush, and floss? Or how about diet, exercise, brush, floss, and see your dentist for regular exams? It may not roll off the tongue, but there are far worse things that could be rolling off your tongue, right down to your heart. Like the very same bacteria that's linked to heart disease, diabetes, Alzheimer's, and more. And by the way, to find a dentist nearby, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and learn more about how oral health links to overall wellness so you can live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Which leads to an email from Will, and I think Will represents a lot of Met fans right now about this. Will writes, guys, we cannot let Pete Alonso leave the New York Mets. He is ours. Everyone else needs to get their own polar bear. Steve is going to have to pay him, but he needs to. It's a tricky spot, man, because Pete Alonso is putting together a career season, which I never thought he'd be able to do because 2019 was such an amazing year to ever eclipse stats like that. And it's going to be a different kind of year, obviously. I don't think he's going to hit as many home runs, but you know, in terms of RBIs, in terms of OPS, in terms of batting average, he's having an unbelievable season. And as much as David Stearns is a pragmatic guy and he looks at the big picture and he's not afraid to make the decision, Steve Cohen may have to step in and say, we can't let this guy go, especially as the all-time home run king in Met history, coming off arguably an MVP season. There is going to be so much fan pressure. Assuming the season continues, obviously we got a long way to go. And the other thing to keep in mind, and don't take this as negative. This isn't negative. This is just reminding you how things can change in baseball. Pete Alonso's year last year was not a good year. We all know it. The numbers were okay, but they were very hollow numbers. He did not have a clutch year. This year has been the complete opposite, right? So he had this very blah season a year ago. He starts off the postseason in his first three games looking completely overmatched. He drops a pop-up in foul territory in game three. He then proceeded to completely change the narrative about his season because of the way it ended, right? The game tying, game winning home run against Milwaukee, the success against the Phillies, even hit the Dodgers series. And so you almost forgot the regular season because of how good the playoffs are. That's baseball. So he's having a great year. What will we be saying if he goes 0-17 in an NLDS we get swept in? You know what I mean? And that's, again, not being negative. I'm not projecting that to happen, but narratives change because the narrative on Alonso changed the other way last year. So you never know. But I do agree with Will. Every time Pete does something, it becomes more and more difficult to ever imagine him on another team, and it would become painful, like it is watching Jacob deGrom have a Cy Young year right now, watching a great player from your team succeed elsewhere. So hopefully it doesn't happen.
That's so frustrating to see what deGrom's doing. And I said that at the beginning of the season. And you sent me the numbers, and it's amazing how stacked there are Cy Young award candidates in the AL. But Jacob deGrom is up there. He's phenomenal. But one thing about Alonso that I do want to hit, I think I mentioned it before, but this is Scott Boras. He finds a way to get his boys paid. Pete Alonso didn't get paid the way he wanted to. But you're telling me right now he is not going to cash it in. If he does, if he finishes the season close to this, he bats over 280. If he drives in 130 RBIs, puts up close to 50 home runs, you're telling me Pete Alonso is going to have a struggle again? I don't know, maybe a two-year deal.
He may. The marketplace for first basemen are just weird, man. Like, I wish I could sit here and tell you what it would look like. And I know it's easy to say, come on, Evan, you're nuts. Hoff's right. You know, this guy has an MVP year. He's going to get 7 years. He's going to get $250 million. He's going to get the Vlad contract. I don't know about that. Like, he's still on the wrong side of 30. And you know the way owners and GMs think. So I don't know. I'd love to sit here and guess what that new contract's going to look like. Like, is he going to get a long-term deal? I don't know.
He's on I hate the wrong side of 30. He's been on the wrong side of 30 for 6 months.
But Hall,
I know.
Telling you how I feel. I'm trying to project what the market's going to be. And you shouldn't even be mad at me. You should be hoping I'm right. Because if I'm right that there's no huge market for Pete, he's a Met. It's exactly what happened this past year. Like, if it doesn't explode into some absurdity, then the odds of him remaining here are higher. I do want to read this email. This is a great one. This is from Brian. The subject of the email is, "Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. Pete Alonso apology form." Guys, thanks for all you do. I consider myself a knowledgeable Mets fan. I've been a diehard for the last 35 years, watching just about every pitch since the inception of DVR. I consume as much granular, advanced data and ancillary media that a mid-40s man can obtain. I also believe in raising my hand when I'm wrong. Therefore, with hat in hand, I can honestly confirm that I have never had such an ice-cold Mets take as my being completely against bringing Pete Alonso back. Pete's last two seasons, combined with his age, had me 100% against Stearns offering Pete a long-term deal. With the exception of Toronto, first base is rarely one of the most expensive positions to fill because the replacement level is so much higher than other positions. I didn't want to lock into another long-term deal with a player who likely won't age well. I also didn't think Alonso would wind back the clock to 2022 after his performance in last year's, quote, prove it year. I have been wrong on all accounts. Mea culpa. P.S. All that said, I'm not at the point where I'd offer him a long-term contract yet. It's okay, Brian. The Mets shouldn't offer Pete Alonso anything right now. Let him continue to have a monster year. And then during the offseason, hopefully after a parade takes place, we'll see what the market is. Like, one thing I've learned about Pete Alonso, and I think we always figured this about Pete, but you certainly feel this way after hearing him talk to the media and even that Mookie Betts podcast, he wants to be a Met. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to be a Met at all costs. If another team blows him away, he'll leave. But I do think he's going to look to give the Mets every opportunity to match whatever his best offer is. So let's not overthink it. Let's stop talking about Pete's offseason. I raise my hand, my fault too, And let's enjoy the fact that he's having an MVP season, because he really is having an MVP season.
No, he is. Did you, by the way, did you see that? I didn't get the quote at all. But maybe I'll pull it for next episode. But David Wright had a congratulations to Pete Alonso.
I did. It was very nice.
That was very nice of him. Do you think Straw's got something ready for him too?
Oh, yeah. I think they've already recorded it. Like, I think David Wright recorded that like 2 months ago. And they put that thing in the bank. David Wish writes, here's to hoping Mendy keeps the starting rotation as is. Seeing Montas getting pounded in AAA weekly, hoping the finances don't determine the starters going forward. I'm going to disagree with you about this, David. Assuming the Mets like what they see from Frankie Montas, like they're not seeing anything in these rehab starts that are alarming, because we're not watching these games. We're seeing the final lines, and yes, they're not good. Assuming they like what they're seeing, I would put him in the rotation. And I don't think you're losing anybody out of the rotation. We've explained this. As of right now, make him a six starter. They're not using six starters unless they play a lot of games in a row. And currently the sixth guy would be Paul Blackburn. So number one, you could insert him as a sixth starter. And number two, the guy who would get bounced if you're bouncing anybody is Tyler McGill. And McGill's been fine. Like, that's how I would describe him. He has been fine. Does he deserve to lose his spot in the rotation? Not really. I think he's a fine fifth starter. But unlike all the other guys, Griffin Canning, David Peterson, Kodai Senga, Clay Holmes, those guys clearly, as of right now, need to remain in the rotation. But I'm not opposed to Montas getting a start next week or 2 weeks from now. Let me get one more email in. Not this one. This is about Pete Alonso again. That's annoying. Not you guys. I mean, just in general. Like, I don't want to think about the offseason. We got to think about the fact that this guy's having an awesome season. How great that is. Oh, I do want to get to a lot of people have alumni ideas. On our last Rico Bronya, the previous episode, not only did we talk about beating the Colorado Rockies, but we talked about the alumni classic the Mets are having, in which it's basically Old Timers Day. It's the Citi Field Mets versus the Shea Stadium Mets. And I said, all right, you know, it's okay. It's got some flaws in it. But for the future, what other alumni classic ideas do you have? We're going to get to that in a few minutes. But let's get to the Rico, I'm the man now, star of the series. This is a tough one. You know, we've handed out this award all season long, and sometimes it's very obvious. Like last week, Pete Alonso in the series against the LA Dodgers was an obvious choice. He was 7-for-16, hit 3 home runs, drove in 9 runs. It was an easy Pete Alonso choice. Because the Mets went out and scored 21 runs in the final 2 games of this series, and they also got really good starting pitching from Kodai Senga, from Clay Holmes, decent starting pitching from Tyler McGill, there is like a menu of options. So let me go through the numbers from these guys, and then I'll tell you who in my mind is the Rico, I'm the man now, star of the series. It may be a little controversial. I'm just going to point that out. So you've got Jeff McNeil, who, while it may have started slowly and may have started with tons of emails saying, why is he batting fifth? McNeil ends up hitting 3 home runs in this series. He goes 5-for-12. He drives in 5 runs. Pete Alonso. I mean, obviously, Pete hit the 2 home runs in the finale of this series, driving in 4. He drove in 2 in the opener. So Pete went a combined 5-for-14 with 2 home runs and 6 RBIs. Then you've got Juan Soto. Granted, Juan Soto did not have an extra base hit in this series. Juan Soto was on base. Are you ready for this? 11 times in 16 plate appearances. 11-for-16. He was 6-for-11 and had 5 walks. In the finale of this series, he went 3-for-3 with 3 walks, was on base 6 times. Game 2 was kind of a bad one for him, 0-for-4 with a walk. And in game 1, he was 3-for-4 with a walk. So RBIs weren't there. Home runs weren't there. There were no extra base hits. But he was on base 11 times in 16 plate appearances. Then you've got Francisco Lindor, who didn't even start the opener of this series, but had the 2-run pinch hit game-winning double. He went 3-for-5 in game 2. And then kind of looked a little off in the finale, went 0-for-4, and wasn't exactly getting back on balls well either. So he went a combined 4-for-10 in this series. Then you've got the 2 starters. Tyler McGill, three starters really, but not McGill. So it's Clay Holmes and it's Kodai Senga. Now I have a strong opinion who I think is the Rico I'm the man now star of the series, but those are all the candidates unless I'm missing anybody.
You are.
I am. Go ahead. Who am I missing?
You're totally missing one guy, and you nailed it because he kind of set the tone in game two of the series. But I would say Ronnie Mauricio, after going 0-for-8 to start his this season, his return, he went 5-for-11, one home run, one double, two stolen bases, two walks. I only struck out two times. I think he had a fantastic series, and he's got to be up there too, personally speaking.
100%. He should be on the menu as well. It's a good call. Ronnie Mauricio, especially with the way it ended for him, like you mentioned, absolute candidate. I apologize for not including him. With that said, who's the Rico I'm the man now star of the series?
Pete Alonso.
Disagree. I love Pete. I don't think it's Pete Alonso.
Then there's only one other guy. It's Jeff McNeil then.
Disagree. Not Jeff McNeil.
If you say Tyler McGill or Paul Blackburn, I'm going to kill you. Who is it?
I'm being dead serious here because, look, we've been handing out this award all season long, and sometimes it is the stats. It's like, this guy had a great series. It's the numbers. And sometimes it's the moments. The Rico I'm the man now star of the series is clearly Francisco Lindor. It is. Let's go back to the opener of this series. The Mets are locked in this ugly, low-scoring malaise, a game in which Lindor isn't even in the lineup. They somehow escape a bases-loaded, nobody-out spot in the eighth inning. It's now the ninth inning. I want to walk you through where we are. It's the top of the ninth inning. The game is tied. The Mets have already used Brazoban and Stanek out of their bullpen. Reed Garrett is not available. Edwin Diaz is warming up in the bullpen. If the Mets don't score and the game remains tied, there's a really good chance that Edwin Diaz is coming into this game in a tie game in the ninth inning, which means even if he gets through it, now you go to the 10th and Diaz isn't available. So that's how important that ninth inning was. Marte strikes out. Soto singles, huge base hit, which is why Soto's a legit candidate for the Rico I'm the man now star of the series. Pete draws this awesome walk. There's two on, there's one out. McNeil flies out the center, sacrifice fly. You are looking at first and third, two outs, tie game. The batter is Tyrone Taylor. Oh, wait. He's called back for Francisco Lindor. Understand the circumstances of this at bat. Forget about what he's gone through and how injured he was. If they don't score here, I think there's a really good chance they lose this game. Very high chance. It's definitely greater than 50-50, as bad as the Rockies are. Because, yeah, Diaz is going to come in and he's going to get three guys out, but now you've got the bottom of the order coming up in the 10th inning, and who are you using to close the game out in the bottom of the 10th inning? Who are you using? It is not going to be Reed Garrett. So you're looking at Paul Blackburn, Jose Buto, Brandon Waddell, or Jose Castillo. That at-bat by Francisco Lindor in the ninth inning with 2-1 and 2 out was far and away the most important at-bat this entire series. It changed that game. And he comes through with an two-run double ripped into the right field corner. So if that at-bat wasn't enough, because it was the most important at-bat of this series, he starts game two and gets on base three times and steals two bases. Now, granted, his base hits were, unfortunately, and it's not his fault, not a part of the rallies where they scored a lot of runs, so I admit that, but they won the game 8-1. You know, how many big hits really were there? Luis Torrens' two-run hit, as I mentioned, the home run by Jared Young. So he backs it up by getting three base hits. And then, yeah, the finale of this series, he took an 0-4. He went 0-5, which brings down his series numbers. But I'm telling you, man, I'll fight anybody to the death on this one. In terms of importance, it's Francisco Lindor. I think he is the Rico I'm the man now star of the series. Did I convince you, Hoff, or do you want to fight?
I mean, I always want to fight, but I'm not. You've convinced me enough. I mean, here's the thing is, you're right. Those moments were huge. It's tough when you have a series that games two and three were so blown open by everybody. So the biggest moment is clearly game one where he came up with the game-winning hit. I mean, that just continued the Mets to just pummel them.
Yeah, I don't want to pick on Pete because he's had such a great year, but the last two-run home run, the game's over. Like, it's not – it's pile-on numbers, and those are
they
great.
They all count. They all count.
I know, but in terms of the Rico, I'm the man now star of the series, they don't count. I mean, they count, but they don't count. For anyone who thinks I'm biased towards Pete, I get it. Statistically, it's Pete Alonso. You could argue Jeff McNeil. I think it's Francisco Lindor, which would make him a four-time winner. So Pete Alonso's got a little battle going on right now because Francisco Lindor is a four-time Rico I'm the Man Now Star of the Series winner, which means Pete's won it five times. Lindor's won it four times. Brett Beatty, believe it or not, has won it twice. And everybody else is single winners. I don't want to spend too much time on the net negative because how could there be a net negative when you sweep a series? But I truly believe that when you have awards like this, you've got to hand it out under all circumstances. So I think that, and it's funny, I had the net negative. I wrote it down early in game three. I said, all right, I feel good. We're going to sweep the Colorado Rockies, but I have to pick a net negative. And the guy who I had picked for the net negative, it was easy. It was a slam dunk, proceeded to hit a two-run home run late in the finale to at least, hey, I hit a home run. How could I be the net negative? And the guy I'm talking about is Brett Beatty. Brett Beatty did not have a good weekend. The two-run home run is hopefully a sign of things to come. Like I said that about Ronnie Mauricio's double in game one. Hopefully this gets Beatty going. But he's obviously cooled off greatly. He also had the error in this series. So you have the defensive miscue. You've got not much offensively till you hit a meaningless two-run home run late. So this is a tough one to give when you sweep a three-game series. But to me, the net negative, and believe it or not, this is the first time he's won the net negative, is Brett Beatty.
Let me just say, you read my mind because he's the guy that I picked out as well because, I mean, he had a bad series. And, yeah. And I've noticed something about Beatty. If you go back to, he's having another bad stretch. This is what he does. He goes through these three games where he goes like 3-for-3, 3-for-4, blows up, gets 4 or 5 RBIs, whatever his numbers are. It's a three-game stretch of very impressive numbers, and then just goes back to not hitting. That's not gonna work for me. I'm gonna tell you that right now.
He's inconsistent, but there's pressure on him because Ronnie Mauricio is here. And right now, the Mets have multiple positions on this team that are up for grabs based on guys performing. Center field is still sort of up for grabs. Third base is up for grabs. DH is up for grabs. To a degree, second base is up for grabs. And I know that leads to the discussions of the trade deadline and going after a center fielder like Duran or whomever, or Cedric Mullins or whomever. But right now, this is a competition. It's a fun competition because Ronnie Mauricio is now up. Brett Beatty was up before. Mark Vientos didn't die. He's going to come back. There's going to be a Mark Vientos last stand, if you will. So right now, because they're winning and you're getting pockets of performances from guys, even though Beatty's cooled off, okay, here's Ronnie Mauricio. Jeff McNeil's gotten hot. Luis Angel Acuña was hot. Now he's cooled off. He doesn't play very much. It definitely varies. I want to follow up on Lindor with this email I got from Tommy Rose, who writes, Francisco Lindor may well be on his way to having number 12 forever in left field. The guy is doing very little to convince us he's not a damn folk hero. There's so much more to get done and so many more years on this contract, but I tell you, there's a chance that Francisco Lindor could go down as the best trade in the history of the franchise. Current leader, Gary Carter. Number two, Yoenis Cespedes. How about Keith Hernandez? I mean, that's a trade too. It really can go down as one of the greatest trades in Met history. You're absolutely right about it. Winning a world championship would be what gets it on that Keith Hernandez level. But Francisco Lindor is going to have a longer career with the Mets than Keith and Gary. I mean, those guys were here in their 30s or in their 30s. Lindor came here in the prime of his career, signed a mega contract. He's going to spend a decade here. And if he could secure a world championship, yeah. I mean, especially when you look at the return. Because when that trade first went down, I know Beningo didn't love it because he didn't want to give up Andrés Giménez. He didn't want to give up Amed Rosario. Amed Rosario is a journeyman. He's bounced around the league. Andrés Giménez turned into a bad contract. So the return of what they gave up clearly is not going to turn into Jeff Kent or anything like that. So, yeah, I think it will go down as one of the greatest trades of all time. Let's see how great. Let me get to this alumni game. We talked a little bit about this on episode 494. If you haven't downloaded it, you can. We talked about the Met victory over Colorado in game one. So if you want a breakdown of game one, the excitement of that game, Lindor's game-winning hit, I recommend you download it. But we also talked about the alumni game, which is old-timers day. They just changed it. It's going to be Shea Stadium era versus Citi Field era. They're going to do that in September against the Texas Rangers on a Saturday afternoon. And I mentioned, do we have ideas on future gimmicks for the alumni game? We've got a few. Let's hear from Ronnie M. Ronnie M. writes, I have an idea for the Mets alumni game. You started this year with the I'm the man now and the net negative for each series. I'd like to implement that into the Mets alumni game, where we bring back Mets players who didn't have good tenures with the Mets. I think fans would get a kick out of it and not make these people feel too bad. But can you imagine a team of Jason Bay, Jed Lowry, Roberto Alomar, Bobby Bonilla, Luis Castillo, Daniel Vogelback, Frank Francisco, Armando Benitez, and Jason Vargas? Maybe managed by Mickey Callaway or Art Howe. Do you like that one? Is that you like that idea for a potential alumni classic? We get all the Met busts versus Met all-time greats.
I mean, I don't know if Steve Cohen would buy into that because he's really trying to get rid of that stink from all the previous years. But, I mean, if you can embrace the humor, sure. If you can have fun with it. Like, the Bobby Bonilla thing, I think Steve Cohen tried to make fun of it and have some fun with it. If you could do that, then yeah. You know what? Laugh at yourself. It's okay.
I do think that that would be knocked out of the park. And if you want to knock one out of the park, raise the apple with Takara Chuhai, a sparkling cocktail that blends real shochu spirits with the delicious flavors of fruits locally grown in Japan. It's available at Citi Field in Fuji Apple, of course, white lemon or white peach and lemon. So as the Mets return home to take on the Washington Nationals, you know what you need to check out. Takara Chuhai, this cocktail is awesome. And hopefully it'll be a celebratory because the Mets will be beating up the Washington Nationals. That's the hope. Another idea on the alumni game comes from Daniel. Daniel writes, guys, I was thinking about your thought on changing the theme every year they have an alumni game, and I thought this would be pretty cool. What if they had an all-star weekend theme and brought back every Met who's ever made an all-star game or who has been an all-star for our team? I.e. Lindor types of players. Obviously, Lindor has not been an all-star yet for the Mets. This year, though, that will change. In this scenario, they could do a home run derby with some of the greater power hitters that used to be players like Piazza, Beltran, Delgado, and even a wild card of Lucas Duda or Ike Davis. For the game, they could do a traditional alumni game or pretend it's like the celebrity softball game, move in the home run fence and play with a softball. This would make things easier for the older guys to compete. It would be cool to see them make their own All-Star weekend in one day before a game as their next theme. I want to warn you about the Home Run Derby. I may have told this story before, but many years ago, actually, I'd say the exact year because they were celebrating the anniversary of the Phillies-Orioles World Series in 2003. It was the 20-year anniversary of the Orioles defeating the Phillies in the 1983 World Series. And so to commemorate it, they had a whole weekend, and one of the days, and I went to this, right before the Oriole-Philly game, was a home run derby. It featured Darren Dalton. It featured Rick Dempsey. It featured Eddie Murray. Larry Boa, I think, was in it, and it was bad. Like, it was, they could not hit home runs. The guy who won was Rick Dempsey because he was an active coach, and so he was in better shape. But watching Dalton and Murray struggle was sad. It's one thing to play a game. You know, you get your one at-bat, you ground out, you move on. A home run derby would be tough to watch. Colin Harvey's idea is the Mets should do World Series teams head-to-head. For example, the 2000 team against the 86 team or the 2015 team. Obviously, half the 69 team are dead and the other half decrepit. Wow, that is mean. I don't want to. I should read these emails ahead of time. I don't think I would have said that. I'm sorry. Let me reread that differently. I don't know why that makes me laugh so much. It's horrible. Decrepit or dead.
Okay, let's try it again. Let's do it a terrible email in a funny way. I think you nailed it.
I mean, I love the email except for the dead and decrepit part. I mean, jeez. He didn't even mean to be mean. It just came across so horrible. All right. Obviously, half the 69 team is not equipped to play a game. How about we phrase it that way? But I also feel it'd be a good way to spark debate between fans of all generations and also see a way to get younger fans to see those guys who literally they haven't seen play. I don't mind that at all, by the way. Like, it is sort of similar to what they're doing with Citi Field versus Shea Stadium, where you've got the younger guys versus the older guys. And clearly the Citi Field team, while it doesn't feature the talent level of the older team, they're younger. So they're just going to have a better chance to win the game. But yeah, I think that's a good idea. It's similar to what they're doing now, but it would be kind of fun. And finally, Michael Kuhn writes, Evan, you said on your last podcast that you want ideas for future Old Timers Days, now known as the Alumni Classic. Here's what I have in mind. He's got a lot of ideas. Number one, a draft. Have two managers draft the players they want on their teams. Number two, homegrown versus acquired. Have the Mets that started their career with the Mets versus players that the Mets acquired. Okay. Number three, righties versus lefties. I don't know if you have enough by team of all righties versus a team of all lefties, and switch hitters can choose who they want to be on. Number four, USA versus the world. Mets players born in the U.S. versus Mets players born outside of the U.S. And number five, sluggers versus hitters. Mets players that were home run hitters versus Mets players that hit for average. Players that did both get to choose. Pitchers who were power pitchers go on the sluggers, and the finesse pitchers go with the hitters. Your thoughts on these ideas? The homegrown versus acquired one is kind of cool. I'm intrigued by that one. Jimmy Kearney writes, a flaw with the Alumni Classic. I get your flaw in the Alumni Classic, the age of the Shea roster versus the age of the Citi roster, but here's my question. It's based off of Reyes being on the Shea roster. He played in both parks. If you count 16 through 18, he played an equal number of years in both ballparks. But I agree, he should be on the Shea roster, even if Citi Field was built specifically for him and not the guy I'm writing about. What roster would you put David Wright on? 5 years at Shea, 8 years at Citi. His last 2 years were basically cameos. His four best years were at Shea. We know about the home run dip, 10 in 2009. But he still batted 307, 39 doubles, and an 837 OPS. 2010, he was back to a typical Wright season. 11, not a good year, only played 100 games. 2012, very typical Wright season. 2013, 112 games, 18 home runs, 307 average. 2014, 134 games, bad season. 2015, Citi Field World Series experience. 16 and 18, lost years. I think that's your answer to even it out. Wright should be a Shea guy. If you started your career with the Mets at Shea, you're a Shea guy. So John Neese, even though he only played 1 year at Shea, should be on the Shea roster. It's a short-term fix as people age, but it's an interesting debate on who's a Shea Met and who's a Citi Met. Your thoughts on that one, Pete?
I do think that Reyes should be on the Citi because that field was built for him. You take the original dimensions. That was a Jose Reyes ballpark. And I liked it. I like the fact that Wright is kind of like, that's where he started. That's where he performed the best. That's where his highlights were, you know?
So much like the Hall of Fame, close your eyes. When you think of Jose Reyes, do you see him playing at Shea Stadium or do you see him playing at Citi Field? Same thing with David Wright. So I'm going to do that. And these are just honestly my answers. And I'll tell you why in a second. When I think of Jose Reyes, I think of Shea Stadium. I think of Shea Stadium because I think of the 2016, which was the best team he was on. and he was a catalyst to that team. I really think of him hitting a line drive that Jim Edmonds caught for the second out in game 7 of the 2006 NLCS. I shouldn't think that. But I also think about him hitting a home run to lead off game 6, which was a Lenny Dykstra-like moment. So when I think of Jose Reyes, honestly, it's not even close. I think of Shea Stadium. When it comes to David Wright, I think of Citi Field. I think of Citi Field because of the moments he had at Citi. And there are 3 that jump out at me. Number 1, he hit the first home run in the history of the ballpark. And at the time, it was a dramatic home run. It was a game-tying home run against the San Diego Padres over the Great Wall of Flushing, as Howie Rose calls it. So he's got that. Number 2, his retirement. You know, that night, that day against the Marlins in September was an event. Mets had a terrible year, but it was a World Series-like atmosphere celebrating the career of David Wright. And then obviously the 3rd one is obvious. To many, this is their favorite David Wright moment, and that's hitting a home run at Citi Field in the World Series. The home run in the World Series by David Wright. And I'm going to tell you guys something. Speaking of David Wright, I revealed this on Twitter a couple days ago because I was looking for ideas in case I missed. Coming up during the All-Star break, when we get a break from Met Baseball and we lead right in to the David Wright jersey retirement ceremony, we are going to have a very special countdown David Wright edition where we are going to count down the greatest moments of David Wright's Mets career. And it's one of those lists that I'm creating. So if you don't like it, blame me. If you disagree with number 1, it's my fault. It's a one-man damn committee. Unless, Hoff, do you want votes on this? Should we make it an official committee? Like, I have a vote, you have a vote, and then I'll ask, like, my dad to break the ties. You want
to
do that?
I like to have a vote, yeah. I think that's a good idea.
I want you to have a vote, too, so I don't take crap for when people don't like where things are ranked.
Listen, I like people hating me, so I'm down for it.
So we are going to have a committee made up of me, Pete Hoffman, and maybe, like, my dad or Joe Beningo or somebody else. And we are going to count down the best moments of David Wright's Met career. And we're going to do that coming up in the All-Star break in about a month. But when I close my eyes, I think of David Wright playing at Citi Field. As crazy as that may sound, even though, yes, his career began at Chase Stadium, the 06 team, all that. There are enough big Citi Field moments where when I think of David, I think of Citi Field. But that's something to look forward to during the All-Star break. Again, you could always interact with us by emailing the podcast, TheRicoB@gmail.com. We're also very excited to announce that we will be doing a live Rico Bronya from Fanatics Fest. So if you are heading out to Fanatics Fest, it's an event that's taking place June 20th to the 22nd. We're going to be doing our pod on Saturday. So that's Saturday the 21st at 12 noon. And that is in the middle of Mets Phillies. So we got a lot of Met baseball to talk about. The Mets are playing the Phillies on Friday night in Philadelphia, Saturday night in Philadelphia, and then Sunday night in Philadelphia. And we're going to do a Rico on Saturday afternoon at 12 noon. So if you're heading to Fanatics Fest, come say hi. If you're not heading to Fanatics Fest, maybe you should come. Live edition of the Rico Bronya. So that's coming up Saturday, June 21st.
And when we sweep the Phillies, I will crack this open in celebration of the division being over.
I may crack open my Mio Sparkling Sake as well, but I'm not cracking it open because we won the division. I'm cracking it open because we kicked the Phillies' asses. We'll crack that open in September, hopefully, in winning the National League East. Oh, real quick, we got the Nationals coming up. Here's the pitching matchups for these next 3 games. We will witness Griffin Canning against Mackenzie Gore. Not going to be easy on Tuesday night. Jake Irvin against David Peterson, and then Kodai Senga versus Mike Soroka in the finale on Thursday afternoon, and then 3 games against the hot Tampa Bay Rays. I figure it'll be Clay Holmes Friday, Tyler McGill on Saturday, and then it's an option. They can come back with Canning on regular rest, or they could insert Frankie Montas or Paul Blackburn, but then they have an off day. So because of that, I kind of assume that they're going to keep the rotation and they're going to keep Griffin Canning to pitch Sunday. And here's the other reason why I want Griffin Canning pitching on Sunday. The Mets, after this homestand, this 6-game homestand, have 3 in Atlanta and 3 in Philly. We just talked about those Philly games. They would have Peterson, Senga, and Holmes set up in Atlanta. And granted, I know the Braves are burying themselves. They had a very difficult weekend against San Francisco. I want to bury him even more. I want to bury him even more. On this homestand, my goal is 4 out of 6. Very simple. Take 2 out of 3 against Washington, 2 out of 3 against Tampa, and that would be a fine success. Thank you very much for listening and downloading another edition, episode 495 of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's always been diet and exercise. Why not diet, exercise, brush, and floss? Or how about diet, exercise, brush, floss, and see your dentist for regular exams? It may not roll off the tongue, but there are far worse things that could be rolling off your tongue, right down to your heart. Like the very same bacteria that's linked to heart disease, diabetes, Alzheimer's, and more. And by the way, to find a dentist nearby, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and learn more about how oral health links to overall wellness so you can live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable 6-blade shaves, swift rinse and 4 blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.